Welcome to Configure It Done, the podcast where SAP leaders share real insights, proven strategies, and stories from front lines of major SAP transformations. Get inspired, get informed, let's get it done.
Welcome back to the Configure It Done podcast. Today we've got David Lawson with us. That's how you pronounce your last name. Lawson?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I've been calling you Lawson all this time.
That's a misspelling of Lawson.
Yeah.
Somebody did it wrong on a birth certificate once. They couldn't read it, so it became Lawson.
Yeah. David Lawson, okay. Yeah. There we go. And you're new to Australia, and I understand you've been with Capgemini for 21 years,
yeah.
So for the listeners that don't know, David, are you able to give a bit of a background on your career and basically what you're doing here?
Yeah. And what am I doing here? I have been doing ERP for a long time. I was a very poor engineer. Got selected for the ERP project in 1991 or something, back in the day in my factory. Then decided that I was better than consulting the people who were buying, so I transferred off to a consultancy, which was just starting, very naively of me. And we grew that. We sold it to a big systems integrator in 1999, stayed with them till 2005, then joined Capgemini and been there for the last 21 and a bit years. Starting off as sort of practice lead in the UK, and then
where you're from, right?
Yeah, I'm from Britain. Yeah, and then spreading out a bit to other packages, Oracle, Salesforce, etc., Maximo, and then strangely in 2017, I took over, following a reorganization in Capgemini, I took over the European Center of Excellence for SAP, which was across all of Europe, and then the global one in beginning of 20, end of 22. I did that to the end of 23. And since then, I've worked in America and around Europe. And in middle of 25, I came over to look after the packages business in Australia. And I guess the whole thing is that we've acquired companies, and we had a heritage company across SAP, Microsoft, Oracle. And it's really about aligning it and growing it and allowing it to reach its full potential. I mean, it's got a lot of good stuff in it, but Capgemini is one of the big three global implementers, and you know, we need to present that image, and that's my experience.
So it's fair to say you've got a bit of a global view, I suppose, of SAP?
I think at the moment I've got a global view, for sure, because that's what I've been doing for the last 7 or 8 years, and I think that is a pretty unique perspective, because there aren't many companies will allow you to have a role looking after all SAP everywhere, across everything from strategy through application support and specialist things such as testing. So I had a very big view of everything that was going on. I can't say I understood everything in great depth, but I had a view of everything. And I think that was a really, really unique perspective. So when I was going to see customers and other SAP partners, I could play that back, and I kind of realized that was my special skill. So I don't know much about PPPI, or I don't know much about payroll, but I do know about what 1600 projects that we've done of how they worked and what does work and what doesn't work and what is failing at other places with other partners or whatever it is. And I realized that was a unique thing that I've been allowed to build, which I'm very grateful for. And I'm still well connected to the global team through regular updates, catch-ups and slide decks. So I know what's going on, but I guess I'm not seeing so many customers in America as I was just 6 months ago. So my knowledge will slightly dim, but I'm still pretty well connected. Yeah.
So let's focus on that global view then, David. You mentioned 1,600 projects that you've indirectly or directly been across. When we first met you beautifully gave a view globally of the SAP market. I think there's 32,000 customers and 400 big ones, I think. But can you share your view?
My world view, yeah.
Yeah, your world view.
So I segment the SAP market a bit. So I start with the very, very big ones and global majors. And I reckon there's about 400 of those. And they're turning over more than 10 billion and they have SAP. Pretty well all of them have SAP. And pretty much all of them have grown up over a long period of time. So it's a bit fragmented, possibly a bit bespoke with quite a lot of technical debt, because quite a lot of it in the 1990s. And they were looking at the date because everything's been driven by the move to S4, and they were looking at the final date, which is 2025, to start off with, and then working back and working how they get there.
Yeah.
And because of their legacy, a lot of them were looking at a sort of quite a large transformation to move forward. There's some that weren't, but, you know, the largest proportion was doing that. And they drove the SAP market for the last few years. There are less of those companies in Australia and New Zealand than there are in other places. So there's more of them in Britain than there is in the entirety of Australia and New Zealand. A lot more in Germany, a lot more in America. So there aren't as many in Australia and New Zealand. That was driving the growth of the market. And I always then think that the market is kind of looking at when they've got to get it done and then working back to when they've got to start. And they had to start. Then you've got the next size down, which is sort of $10 billion down to $1 billion or something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few thousand of those. And they are now the ones that are driving the new opportunities and the new roadmaps and things like that. The large ones are still going on and they're changing vendors and adding things and stuff like that. They're not decreasing yet, but they're sort of steady.
And so you call that like the middle market.
The middle market, but yeah. Big middle market. I think a lot of people call them large customers. Certainly in Australia and New Zealand, you'd call them big.
Yeah.
And they're now underway or starting to get underway or planning or whatever. The most of them are now thinking and moving forward. Utilities tend to do that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of them. That's driving a lot of the market at the moment. Mm. And then you've got a lower tier of customers, which are the sort of SME market, who are probably a lot more standard, probably only got one instance of SAP, don't need to start yet because they don't need to finish yet. And that's a big wave yet to come, but that's more in the smaller clients. So I think the market was initially driven by the large ones, and some of the mid-sized ones have had to transform, and there's still a bit of new business knocking around. The mid-sized ones are now driving the tenders and the amount of work and the roadmaps, and then the rest are yet to come, and I think that will be some kind of enormous wave that will break. But I suspect there'll be a lot of automation and AI and things like that driving the migration there, because it won't need as much reorganization. So I think that's still to come, largely.
Yeah. Okay. You've touched on Australia. You've been here for six months, is that right?
7 months with a bit of a holiday in between, yeah.
7 months, a bit of a holiday. And you mentioned, obviously, there's not many of those kind of big customers here, but your first 7 months, what's your impression of Australia, and what are the kind of key differences that you see?
Well, there's a few things that strike me. I would say it's a little bit behind. I mean, I've seen waves going through countries all over the place. So Germany, incredibly logical. Clear, I can't put an accent on at this moment. But they started working through this stuff very early. They probably went first.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Scandinavians went next, who were probably a mindset. A lot of manufacturing companies there as well. Then I think that's gone to the UK and France, and America has arrived a bit later, but is there now, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I think Australia was probably the next to go. And I think they were a bit behind the rest of the world. Germany, you know, the minute they heard it announced, they started planning. Maybe other places spent a bit more time to understand it or whatever.
That sound very German.
Yeah. And so I think it's to do with the type of industries and national characteristics of the places. And you can't underestimate how close SAP and the German manufacturers are. You know, they're basically in each other's offices all the time. And so, you know, that they probably knew what was going to happen. They started planning it. They said, you know, it's gone in waves. And I think it's also a bit by industry. And the industries that are disrupted the most are the ones that do stuff quickest. So the move to electric cars or decarbonization or retail. And then there aren't any car manufacturers in Australia and New Zealand, so they didn't have to go because they're not being disrupted by new supply chains and stuff like that. So, and the number of global companies, and I know there's miners who are global, but there's a lot more truly global companies in other countries than there are in Australia and New Zealand. And, you know, that adds to the complexity. So, you know, a lot of the work here is more self-contained, so they tend to be a bit simpler. So it has been a bit slower. I would say the other thing, and I think that generally speaking, the market here is cautious, steady, sensible, not quite as bullish and gung-ho I think that reflects to the geography being very large and people having to move around. If they lose their jobs, they've got to move quite a long distance. So they don't want to lose their jobs. They don't want to do anything daft. And they're not that. They're not going to push something that's radical.
Yeah.
So they're steadier and they tend to take things in steps. They take cautious steps rather than, right, we're going to do this. And I think that's true. So things are spread out a bit longer and there's many more breaks and things like that in the actual process, which I've noticed here. And it's a very networked market. So everybody knows everybody else's business and yeah. whether it worked or whether it didn't. And I think that has an effect as well. I mean, if something's gone wrong somewhere, everybody else knows about it. And sadly, bad news seems to travel much quicker than good news.
Yeah.
So, you know, it puts brakes on things and people have rethinks. And I think that's the nature of the sort of state-based SAP ecosystems that you got, that everybody knows each other. If something goes wrong, they go, oh, that didn't work. And then they get cold feet. And the markets in other countries are so much bigger and the mobility is so much greater that I think that's it. And I think really, if you're in America or Germany and you will be famous for doing something exciting and that balances above the Australian, well, everybody will know I failed sort of thing. And it's just a balance thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I've read one of your articles and I like your point around a lot of companies being cautious. In one of those articles, you were quoted in there that you expect 2026 to have 50% more work than last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had a chat off camera before and you mentioned there's a lot of tenders and a lot of things that are dropping, but 50%, do you see that coming to fruition?
Yes. I'll expand on that. I think 2026. I mean, I'm currently got people adding out the customers, the larger ones, what they're up to and what they're doing and the approach they're taking. And at the beginning of 2025, I think it has said maybe a third have started or less than a third. I think that's ticked over to about two-thirds.
Wow.
As we get through 2026. And I suspect going forward, there might be one more year of that sort of new tenders, new roadmaps, and then we'll get into a making sure it gets delivered phase, which is going to go on for quite a while. But I think there's been a massive acceleration in the larger ones in the last 6 months. And that's nothing to do with me arriving. I think it's just dumb luck that I've arrived as there's a lot of work and a lot of people thinking about it. And I think it's back to this point. You think about where you've got to get to and then work out when you've got to start. And that everybody's worked out the same thing and momentum building within the market. And there's regulatory periods and stuff that affect it in utilities and government budgets and things like that. So it's all come together to create quite a lump, I think, going through at the moment.
It's a bit of a land of opportunity then.
Yeah, but then it's going to be stable for a while, and then I don't see it declining for a while, but then there'll be new ones coming in. There's always new business, and there's a few big new business opportunities. But yeah, I think the sort of doubling won't happen again. I think there's going to be a bit of growth, then it will be stable, and then inevitably it will start to tail off. If SAP don't announce R5, which we just don't know, it might happen. What will happen? Yeah, so that's what my feeling is. Yeah.
Okay. Zooming back out to some of those global big clients that moved first. Yeah. I think when we first met, you mentioned that they've started their greenfield implementation, or some of them have started their greenfield implementations, and 7 or 8 years later, they only had one site live.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to tap into that a bit further, and why was that happening, and if I was a company in Australia looking to start my S4 journey, what are some of the common pitfalls that we should be avoiding?
I could talk about this for an hour, but first of all, the pitch has changed during the process. So SAP have announced RISE, which is a big deal. They've clean core and the API extensibility has become real during this time. So the product's changed, which is, you've got to take account of that. Then I think people had thinking, which was based around what we did last time, which was 2003 or 1994 or whenever it was. which was really replacing a load of disparate systems with SAP, and they weren't particularly joined up. And now you're taking something which is very joined up and integrated with systems like, you know, when they put it in, we didn't have CRM, we had a sales desk, and we didn't have PLM, we had CAD/CAM. Now you're having to unpick all these really complicated digital chains, and we put it in before the internet in some cases. Now, mm-hmm. you know, it's all very, very faster. And we didn't have so much global supply chain type stuff going on. And so it's got harder because you've got to unpick all that stuff and you've got to think end to end rather than just what can SAP replace. So that's a lot different, deeply integrated. So that's a big factor. I think the whole market understood what it took last time and remembers what it was like and probably don't want to do it again. So they're a bit concerned about that. A lot of people, oh, I remember what that was like. We had to work really hard and I lost two weekends and things like that. And so there's a bit of that going on. Everybody's older. We, you know, I was doing SAP in terms of staying up all night when I was 30 something, and I'm a bit older now, so maybe I don't want to. And then business has definitely changed. The old way where you could sustain a 6 or 7 year program and you knew what you were doing through that time, that's gone. You'll change finance directors. You'll change your business will change. You'll reorganize. It's very hard. You're always hitting a moving target. So the idea that you can build a template and roll it out, and it's going to sustain it right the way through and you design the right thing, gone. You've got to be more agile, quicker, adopt the clean core stuff, go faster, chase benefits. It's changed. And I think I feel a bit sorry for some of the people who started before the product changed so much that they've now got to relook at it. I feel that's something that wasn't their fault. They went first. Nobody knew. I do think some of the people who went for, I think some of the people went for a huge moonshot in the first place. Maybe we didn't know, but anybody trying one now probably is misguided if they just look around. I mean, I've seen customers who are going, every customer thinks they're special and they'll do it. And the reality is, find me one and tell us why you're any different from the, you know, the ones that haven't done it. And I think with the new approaches you've got with, some of the sort of hybrid approaches and a bit of upgrade, a bit of selective data migration, a bit of new stuff and chasing it, you get pretty well all the benefits and a greatly reduced cost and a greatly reduced risk and heartache. And I think the other, you know, I'm still getting the odd tender in this market where somebody comes and here's a list of 7,000 things we want the system to do. You're going to go for standard. It's not about writing down what you do at the moment and hoping for it. It's about adopting standard and starting off on the wrong foot. You've probably lost it already. Mm-hmm. You know, it's far more beneficial to think about it in a modern way. Work out the outcomes you want. Think about how you will get those outcomes, the amount of change involved, and drive it through and accept that you're going to go standard. Why aren't you writing a functional spec if you're going standard? You don't need to, you know, and then driving through sprints and doing that kind of thing.
So if you had to kind of summarize in the key learnings for Australian customers, based on what you just said there, what would be the key ones they should look out for?
Go faster. When you do your roadmaps and stuff like that, make sure that's the first stage of your implementation, not just a load of PowerPoint that you can't use at the next stage. Don't set unreasonable expectations with your business or your users and make sure that's 100% aligned. You will not have a problem with the technology. Your problems will be to do with change, business impact and adoption, and look after your data. That seems to be a very key thing that people have an opportunity to get that right. Other than that, if you do your architecture right and make it flexible, put up some scaffolding effectively to allow you to change things as you go along, try and avoid interim states, go for the biggest bang you possibly can. Don't do it phased and roll it out. Just get it done. It will work. And I will say that the people who are on S4 and a clean core and an extensibility platform are very happy. So get on it and start getting some benefits. Yeah.
And one of the things you mentioned there was data. And that leads me nicely onto AI and the future. So AI and SAP, I'm going to leave it really broad, but yeah, what's your view on that?
I think you're talking about the difference between the people who make the cars and the people who own the roads. And I think SAP owns the road, it owns the data. People will be wanting the data within SAP to do things with. So you can look at it many different bits. So you've got plenty of accelerators within SAP to make implementation quicker and safer. And also, you know, our company and other companies will have lots of that. So we can read the old code, write a functional spec, write a tech spec, see whether it's available, the new functionality, say yes or no, and then rewrite the code in the extensibility you want in a clean way and write a test script. Remove that stuff is done. Booking rooms is done. Creating data needed for testing, that's done, all AI. So making it quicker to do is there. Signavio benefits all linked together. AI.
Happy days.
So it's faster and more reliable, and you can do a few things you couldn't do before, like comparing multiple SAP systems, saying this is what they're like and this is the best fit. So that wasn't possible beforehand. You need the world's biggest spreadsheet to be able to do that. Now you can do it with AI. So it's much better to put it in, and there's a lot of acceleration with AI. Next thing is the sort of the process optimization improvements that SAP have built in through Joule, and that's there. And of course, you're using them. It's there. I mean, it's what, you know, get a CV in, do your accounts, but all that stuff is there. And then you then go to extensibility with BTP, writing nice new agents for doing things that you couldn't do before, whatever it is, releasing batches or exception management in defense manufacturing, that sort of stuff. We have to look in one, and you do that through BTP and other packages, bring it together, and you've got a nice agent. And then you've got this whole new thing with the BDC. We're taking data out of SAP, you're enriching that data with data at all sorts of places, building new things, and then putting information back into SAP. And I think there was an opportunity, if you stop thinking about individual processes and process steps and free your mind a bit, that you, instead of saying, why, how do we automate accounts receivable? You say, well, have we got accounts receivable? That kind of thought can be built in through that. And I think SAP, as long as it's got that data, it's a good condition, people will continue to do more and more stuff on top of it, and it's going to grow. And SAP will have a nice time getting more usage and consumption, and the SIs and the customers will get a nice time in terms of benefit, but also by doing more. So, yeah, I think it's in a great place to take advantage of it. And I think there's a number of things that sprung up around SAP, doing automation or sorting out particular problems, which you don't need anymore. And so SAP's got an opportunity to sort of eat that stuff anyway and do it. So I think it's a big opportunity for SAP, big mind shift. I think it can provide the business case for S4 migration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got a nice diagnostic. You run it over your business, and it says, well, you've got these many people doing this. You don't need that many. You can have this many agents. And I think building agents is a bit overhyped, because we can build an agent and provide it a reasonably cost-effective place, and we've got 450 of them already written. So that's not a problem. I think it's more about the imagination, managing it, getting all the security and architecture right, and getting it into your implementation. So I think SAP is in a great place with AI. Clearly, you'll have fewer users, but they'll make that up through BTP and stuff like that and BDC. So it's a bit of a trade-off, but I'd much rather be SAP than some other things.
Hmm.
You know, I think it's a good place.
Okay. As recruiters, Dave, we get asked the question about upskilling to future-proof work. What's your message to SAP consultants around future-proofing? Where should they upskill? Should it be AI? Or, yeah, where should they upskill?
Well, apply for a job and we'll give you the training. I think anybody who can talk business as well as tech is at a premium, always has been, always will be.
Yeah.
Solution architects across multiple modules always will be. Engagement managers who can talk to customers and get things across the line and convince them that clean is a good thing will always be in a premium. So people skills, workshop skills, business skills. I would recommend everybody reads the Sunday papers business section and understand what's going on that drives it. That'll be the first thing. I think in technology, you know, we're going to be doing less development, we're going to be doing less testing, we're going to be doing less of that. We'll probably be creating profiles automatically. Mm-hmm. So you've got to understand more about that what it's going to do and what it's going to be, and then advise on the architecture and the security and things like that. And then in terms of modules, I mean, Australia is big. So it has a lot of transportation management, it has a lot of planning, it has a lot of EWM. Those seem to be big areas rather than sort of the manufacturing side of things. I like group reporting. I think that's got a bright future to allow flexibility. Event-driven stuff, multi-cloud, Yeah, though cloud ALM, I think, is going to be an enormous thing. And I think eventually we're going to see a move to DevOps for most SAP exploitation. So understanding how that all works and fits and Scrum mastering and things like that. I don't want to be cruel, but if you're just sitting there thinking I'm going to be the last basis man in the country who knows what I'm doing, and I haven't taken account of RISE and I haven't taken account of all this new stuff, you're probably mistaken.
Yeah. So
get moving, get on with it. You know, you can sit in a niche for a while, but eventually it will go. So yeah, that's sort of stuff you want. There aren't enough new SAP consultants being, I don't need to breed SAP consultants. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
There aren't enough new ones coming through in this country with the right communication skills. And I think it's a huge opportunity for people's careers. They can accelerate fast because you're kind of in white space moving out and get on with it and join and get on with the program. I'd love it. People with old thinking will slowly disappear, I guess. Yeah.
And lastly, David, I don't normally ask this question, but I will here. But obviously, there's a lot of customers yet to move.
Yeah.
If they did, why Capgemini?
Oh, I'm not going to advertise. I think you should consult widely with the market and get some different opinions, and they'll be very different. And I do feel that everybody's got something to sell. And that probably includes me. So you've got advisors will advise, technologists will technology, you know, whatever. And they'll all have their own approaches. So consult very widely. But I consider us to be one of the two partners globally who can do everything you'll need to do it. And we've got all that experience. So why wouldn't you talk to us? At least have a chat. You might disagree with what we say. You might find it's not suitable for you, but have a talk. And that would be it, really. I mean, I'm not going to say, oh, we're better than everybody else. Everybody can be good, but have a talk with us and see what you think. And I've met probably half of the top 80 customers now. And yeah, they might not want to go with us or work with us, but at least we've probably sparked off a few debates and stuff like that. And I think that the use of multiple partners in account is good. It challenges. It reduces cost, it brings in new ideas, and it keeps us all on our toes commercially. So I'm you know, sharing with people like that. I want to shake up the market. I'm not going to be around working forever. And, you know, if I leave Australia in a few years' time and they're doing SAP faster and they've turned it into a true digital platform that delivers benefits and it's kind of shaken off some of the stuff that's grown up around it and everybody's coming along and going, well, let's change the SAP system to this new pricing or a new tariff in utilities or a new go-to-market or a new supply chain, my work here is done. I'll be very happy with that. And, yeah, that'll be good.
Excellent. David, thank you for coming on. That was brilliant, really insightful.
Thank you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Oh, those questions are easy. I've had harder ones.
There you go.
Thank you very much.